The Corrital staff, along with all of you, are spending time with their families over the holidays. And so we're re-releasing two of our Hall of Fame casts, the one last week and one this week. Perhaps by now you're done with the holidays and beginning to review your year and setting goals for next year. And we'll take a bet that you didn't find time to do everything you wanted to do this year, and that you're vowing next year will be different. Well, it won't be different if you don't do something differently. In this cast, we'll talk you through analysing your time and making sure you achieve your number one goal next year. And here's a hint, it goes on your calendar. This was a two-part cast and we've smushed it together so you get everything you need to know all at once. I'll be back in the middle so you know when to stop if you need to take a break.
This week's cast is about every manager's most precious and perishable resource, time. It marches on mercilessly every day, only more slowly on those days before vacation and more quickly on Sunday. Most managers do a terrible job of using their time effectively. In other words, most of us are terribly inefficient. This cast will teach you the basics of how to become effective at using your time, which will make you both more efficient and effective.
So finally, Mike, after nearly a year, we've made some time for a cast about time management.
No, we haven't made time, Mark. you're constantly beating me up about my vocabulary and language around time, and as you always say, we can't make time. And we're certainly, although we're high D's, we're certainly not God here.
Okay, I agree. So since we're going to be sensitive about time, since it's a perishable commodity, let's get right to our recommended approach for being efficient for executives.
Excellent. Okay, so there's some basics about time management. Let's talk about the basics and we can get into a little bit more detail.
Yeah. As I mentioned in my blog a while back, I get paid to go in and work with executives. And when I do, the first thing I do is ask about their schedule. I say, look, I want to see your calendar. And usually an assistant prints it out and I analyze it. And at the same time, I'm asking the executive about what their priorities are. And then I try to match up their stated priorities with their calendar. And, you know, even executives that make $250,000 a year, Mike.
And they always match up, right?
Not so much. They rarely agree. And I understand why. I've been there and I understand that. And really, there's a part of me that feels bad about this in a way because I feel like I'm getting paid very well to harvest some pretty low-hanging fruit. It doesn't take rocket science. It doesn't take a lot of intellect to do this, to just start there and say, hey, I think you could, you know, if in fact you say these are your priorities, if they really are, then let's just make sure you spend time on your priorities. And if after 3 or 4 months you get better results by spending time on your priorities, gee, I've earned my pay 10 times over. It's really hard to argue that you should be able to keep your job if your schedule doesn't reflect your priorities and your priorities go undone. Right? If you've got three priorities and you can't find, your boss can't find them in your calendar, and those three priorities look bad in terms of metrics or reporting, what are you going to say? Well, I didn't want to do them. Surely the first thing we understand as an executive is the role, you don't start by saying, what is it I want to do? In fact, Drucker talks about this very openly. He says, it's not what I want to do. It's what the role requires of me. Right? That's why a lot of people who get to CEO say, wow, I want the job. I didn't realize what the job required of me. This is a lot different. And to be really effective, you have to ask what it requires of you, and you have to constantly re-ask yourself that at the executive level, probably every 6 months. So,
okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Now there is a caveat here. In the fast-paced and demanding business world that we're in right now, there's very little room for error at the executive level. And again, if you aren't spending time on your key priorities, it's hard to argue that you should be able to keep your job. But there is a caveat. People tell me, okay, Mark, the major stuff does seem to get done. You know, we're not getting fired. And yet you're telling me that all these executives are way off base when it comes to how they're spending their time. How is that possible? And to some degree, I have a little bit of a glib answer. And of course, we're talking at a high level here, so we can get in more. If we had more time, we'd get in more detail. But there we go. If we had more time.
How many times must I tell you? You can't make time, Mark. Yes.
It's somewhat of a glib answer, but in many cases, the answer is it's the fire drills. Every once in a while, what's really important becomes time-wise important, and the boss tells everyone for the next week, no one does anything but X. You know, it's the end of the quarter, we've got to get our numbers up, or for the next period of time, we've got a big push on to do this or that or the other thing. And so what I'm getting at is that overall, we make up for our overall inefficiencies by cramming, by laser focusing, by sheer brute forcing things at times. And it works after a fashion, but that is not the most efficient or effective way to be, and it leaves you almost no room for error. And if you have a double whammy of you're not really available and your people aren't really at their best and the market turns south on you all at once, you have a triple witching hour, and suddenly there is no amount of brute force you can do when your competitors are doing it right to overcome that fact, and you report a bad quarter, and suddenly people start worrying. If they're smart, they start worrying in a public corporation.
Yeah. Okay. So in our best manager tools tradition, what the heck can we do about it? You know, even better, how can manager tools listeners take advantage of this opportunity to become more efficient and thereby more effective?
Okay, I feel bad about this, but I'm going to do something that we did recently in a cast a while ago, which is I actually have 4.5 steps. Not 4, not 5, I know, it sounds dumb.
Did I say anything? I didn't say anything?
No, you didn't, yeah, exactly, you didn't say anything. You just had a very descriptive facial expression, which we'll talk about later in a cast on high Ds, I'm sure. Step 1, roughly assess your time. Not hard to do. Step 2, capture your priorities. Step 3, do a rough analysis, or step 3A, this is the half in there, do a Drucker analysis, which is a little bit more detailed, and it's not hard to do.
Well, but I like it the sound of that. Time.
Some people will, but it's probably reserved for the executives that we've got. But some of the more people who are really excited about this will do the Drucker analysis, and it's worthwhile. It's a very interesting analysis. And then step 4 is to put your number one priority on your calendar first. So those are the 4.5 steps. Let's go through the details.
Okay.
All right.
Roughly assess your time. What's that about?
Easy step. And you can actually skip this step, but I don't recommend it. I mean, you could actually start with step 2, but step 1 really kind of puts you in the right mindset, the right frame of mind, and it doesn't take hours. We're talking about minutes here, or less than an hour to get this done. We want you to sit down with a pen and paper and nothing else. Okay. Nothing else. Pen and paper. And ask yourself a simple question. What do I spend my time doing? I could make it a more complex question, but that's really what it boils down to. What do I think I spend my time doing? And in terms of, you have to have a sample because you can't think of the last year. It's too big. Your brain can't handle it. So you think back over the past 2 to 3 weeks. If you're saying, okay, Mark, which is it, 2 or 3? Pick 3. More data is generally better to do some analysis on. You want a bigger pile to sift through. Okay, and what we want you to do is think about your work days. Now, I just said earlier, pen and paper and nothing else. Don't look at Outlook in advance. Mm. Don't look at Lotus Notes. Don't look at Oracle Calendar. Okay, don't have your BlackBerry next to you. Don't have your Trio next to you. Don't have your PDA next to you. No Franklin planners, no day timers, no day runners, nothing. Pen and paper. Because that's what you deal with at work when you're going from meeting to meeting. You don't have all that stuff right in front of you reminding you. We want to get you in a framework of thinking about your work. Not about your time, really, but about your work. Okay?
Okay.
So we're going to infer some things about time from your work.
Okay. Are we trying to get the number of hours I spend on a day, the number of hours I spend in the week, is percentages? What am I writing down here?
Really, a list of things you did.
A list, okay, just a list. Not exactly. Time, just how I spent it.
Work, yes, exactly. Okay. And that's an important distinction, work versus time. We're going to think about time, but really what we're going to be looking at is work.
Okay.
We're not looking for a numerically valid analysis here, okay? We're not looking for Six Sigma level thinking. We're suggesting you get in the mindset of thinking about your work and the construct of time. And really, what's probably going to happen, Mike, is people are going to discover how much of their time they cannot account for.
Right.
So here's what they do. What's going to happen is they'll remember the big stuff. You're going to remember meetings, key deliverables. You'll also remember things that at the time seemed important that were blow-ups or interesting or exciting or whatever. But in hindsight, just seemed interesting at the time, but really don't make that much difference. And in fact, the reason for that, by the way, is you're remembering now because remembering them now, sorry, is because they had emotional content at the time. And emotion is the reason we have memory. Emotion is the thing that makes our memories, how we feel about things and how we categorize things. I wish it weren't so. I'm sure it's the same true for you. I wish it was just all logic and rationale, but it's not. It's emotion. So those things that are most emotional are the things that are going to be easiest to remember. Okay. And I'm really talking about, you know, maybe you spend 45 minutes. At a minimum, you're going to spend 15 minutes. And basically what we want you to do is from memory alone, come up with as many things as you did, a list of things that you did. Attended a meeting on X, attended a meeting on Y, met with Joe in my one-on-one, gave feedback to Bob, whatever the case might be. Okay. Literally a list, a raw list of all the stuff that you can remember you did in the past 3 weeks. You don't need to edit it. You know, we're not going to suggest that you're wrong about what your memory is. We just want a raw list. If you want to do an additional step from this, if you want to think about it a little bit more or get into a little teeny sense of analysis, you can categorize the list if you want, but you don't need to because this list is so raw that it's not helpful to categorize this raw list, in my opinion. I didn't used to recommend this step, Mike. I do now because if I don't, and people start the more detailed analysis that we're going to get into step two and step three and 3A, they get frustrated. They haven't gotten ready for it yet, and they haven't thought about work for the past couple of weeks, and people get overwhelmed with the details. So we just want them in the mindset of thinking about work and time.
Okay. Okay?
Over a three-week period. And look, if you don't have your calendar in front of you, and you're trying to think back to 3 weeks, folks, don't feel bad if you suddenly discover you can't remember a darn thing about 3 weeks ago Tuesday.
Yeah, that'd be me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I may be okay with that because I'm really pretty careful about my time, but without my calendar, I don't know. I'd have to do it again to be really, really sure.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay. All right.
So it doesn't matter how categorized you do it, what characterization, what analysis you do, because trust me, this is past tense. It doesn't matter. There's nothing you can do about the past, and your thinking will have changed when you finish step two, three, and four. Okay?
So that's step one.
Yeah.
Just got a list of activities, things I've done.
And again, you can skip it, but I don't recommend it, because it's really helpful to get a sense of what your memory gives you and what your schedule will tell you. And then what your schedule will not tell you as well.
Okay. Well, I've learned to trust that when you tell me don't skip something.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Don't skip it.
Okay.
I got it. Okay. So step one, we're going to get a list of kind of the things we're working on. Going to look back over 3 weeks. No calendars.
And I'll just let the cat out of the bag and recognize you have a really bad memory.
Right.
And you're not going to have a lot of things written down. And it's going to be pretty random about whether or not they're valuable.
Right. Okay. Okay. So then step two. Capture your key priorities.
It's a pretty simple step. Again, you might be able to do it. You'd probably be able to do this in less than an hour. There's a little advance work in some cases, so it may take a day to find some of your source material. Now, to be fair, you may not have any source material to work with. This is probably particularly true for some of our professional members, so on, like our friend and member Tim G, the dentist, or small business people, where their organizations haven't yet built the documentation that helps out in this case. And that's fine if that's the case. Just hold on to your notes that you come up with during this step for later when you start thinking about building that kind of infrastructure in your organization, job descriptions and so on. What you do in this step is you gather up your job description, your boss's job description, your direct's job descriptions, your last couple of reviews, obviously, if they're in the job that you're in now, you don't need job descriptions or reviews from your previous jobs. Any documents that you report key metrics on, so maybe you do a monthly or a quarterly business report to your boss or to finance or to operations or whatever, you want those. And then something else, the last 10 to 15 PowerPoint presentations that you or your team and or your team have presented. About 2 years ago, I added this one. And the reason why is because things change pretty rapidly. And a lot of times people go back to their reviews and their job descriptions, and it's no relation to what they're doing now. Now, to some degree, that's because they're way off base with their priorities. Their job really hasn't changed, but they've gotten so far down in the weeds, they can't find their way back up to the forest and the trees, okay? But in other cases, it's legitimate. Mark, we're working on something completely different here. And yeah, that was my job description, but there's no question I'm not going to be evaluated based on that job description a year from now. I will say this, though. If you're a savvy manager, if you're a politically savvy manager, if your job description has become outdated, but there's not a new one, and you're absolutely certain that you're down in the weeds for the right reason, at the end of one of these days, in the next 3 or 4 days, pick your head up out of the weeds, go to your boss and say, look, I just want to be clear. This is what my job description says. We're in a completely different place, and I just want to validate that a little bit. And if he says, yeah, say, look, I'm going to send you an email. I'm going to attach the job description to it, and I want you to respond back. Yeah, you're right. This is outdated. We need to work on that. Otherwise, what could happen, Mike? You got a job description X when, in fact, your job, in your assumption and your boss's assumption, really your job now is Y. What happens potentially at the end of the year if you don't have that conversation?
Oh, you have a big discrepancy at the end. Yeah. You have an argument about, what do you mean I was supposed to do this? I was focused on doing
exactly that. Right. Yep. In other words, your boss, in a rush, because we know how bosses do in terms of job descriptions and reviews, starts evaluating you based on the review. For whatever reason, because his boss thinks the job hasn't changed or he hasn't briefed it right or whatever else. And now you're in a pickle and you worked your butt off all year and you're in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
You need to dot your I's and cross your T's.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. And I don't like telling organizations you need to work on these job descriptions. And in fact, that's where I came up with the recommendations. If you remember in one of our forecasts about annual reviews, we said this is a quick way to come up with a job description. You can go back to that cast now if you're wondering how much your job description has changed, answer those questions, and you can come up with a paragraph that you could submit to your boss to update your job description really easily. It's not, you know, you're not paying an outside firm for it. Yeah. You can save a lot of money too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's accurate. Okay. So again, you want those PowerPoints because if things have changed a great deal, you want the PowerPoints to tell you this is the kind of stuff we're working on. Not necessarily that the PowerPoint topic is going to be in your job description or in your thinking about your responsibilities, but you can aggregate it or you can say, I'm going to infer that in fact we've changed and this PowerPoint is representative of this general category of priority that I'm going to be thinking about. Okay. Now, some people add a step about going and talking to their bosses and going and talking to their team. I've tried that a couple of times. Sometimes it works. It depends on the culture. Because we're talking to individual managers here and we're not talking to an organization as a whole, I generally say stay away from that step because it'll add a couple of weeks to this. And you don't want to add a couple of weeks. We're trying to make this as granular, as atomic as possible so that when people do this, they can get some satisfaction about it within a week, right? We don't need to take a month to do a time analysis. Okay? You don't need that long. So, yes, you can add that step. You can interview people. You can talk to people and so on. But scheduling that and making it happen and then analyzing the data and so on and coming up with a list of questions and everybody asking everybody the same questions and having a form, and you don't need to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't see there's enough additional value to justify the delay in completing this 4.5-step process.
Okay.
Okay? Okay, so with all these documents in hand, take some notes. And basically what you're asking yourself is, what are my key priorities? What can I infer from all the stuff I've got? Some of it's not inference. If your job description's accurate, that's not an inference. You just literally lift off of the job description. Your key priority is X. It's lovely. A lot of firms don't have that, and that's okay. If you're not smart enough to infer from a set of tasks into key priorities, you ought not to be a manager. So the best way to do this, though, is to start capturing everything in terms of the responsibilities and so on. And once you have an exhaustive list, start aggregating into categories that might look like major areas or priorities. Again, you may have to infer from tasks right down into the weeds up to what the priority headings are for a group of those tasks. That's fine. That's what we're asking you to do. We're asking you to think, to synthesize, to analyze at the task level and to synthesize that, aggregating it up into, okay, when I glom all these together, what's the category those fit under? Because you wouldn't want a job description that has 75 tasks
right
on it.
So can you give me a couple examples of?
Sure. You know, one-on-ones are certainly something you do. But on the other hand, that you may put that in the category of development of your folks.
Right.
It might be might be something around monthly reporting. You might be preparing a monthly report and then preparing a personnel attrition list and so on. And that may be running your business according to some metric. You know, mm-hmm. you've got a 34% profit margin or a 19% profit margin or a operating income level or something. And that's your priority is the operating income. And then there are categories of tasks that go underneath that.
Okay.
Now look, it's okay to have a list of as many as 50 tasks that you think you're responsible for, okay, to start with. But you can't have 50 priorities, like I said, or 75 tasks. So the rule of thumb here is you can't have more than 10 priorities. And I'm going to go a step further. 10 priorities, okay? But now you start pushing back. This is when people start pushing back. Because I ask you to come up with key priorities, not priorities. Okay, fine, nomenclature, maybe you don't like that. I'm not trying to make this impressive. I'm trying to give you verbiage to get you started on doing the work. What's important here is not what we call it, the naming, it's the actual work. Now, take those 10 and boil them down to no more than 5 key priorities. It may be that they're all priorities, but you're going to say which 5 are the most important. Maybe you can't take the 10 and turn them into a list of 5. In other words, taking 2 and putting them together into 1. I don't care about that. You're going to have 10 priorities, but 5 of them are going to be key. Okay? Just right. 5. You may put those 5 as secondarily or as tier 2 priorities. They're still priorities to you, but you know, you want to use a different name, that's fine. No more than 5. Now, tell you a brief story. Peter Drucker talks about executives, of course, talked about executive time management all the time. In fact, Drucker's book, The Effective Executive, the first prescriptive chapter, which is actually chapter 2. Chapter 1, he talks about effectiveness can be learned. Chapter 2 is Know Thy Time. And he specifically walks through all essentially a different way, a more comprehensive way of doing this for executives. And we'll talk about that in step 3.5, step 3A. But when Drucker used to talk about executives, he would say this. He would say, look, the first thing you need to do is not ask what you want to do, because that's what school children do. You should ask, what does this role require of me? That's the first thing an executive asks. And then what she says is, okay, if that's what it requires of me, what do I need to do in order to achieve those requirements? And he says, now, look, if you come up with a list of 5, no offense, but you're wrong. Okay? Because the executives that I know that are highly effective, and that's the title of his book, The Effective Executive, do one thing very, very well. Only one. And they delegate other things to other people. It's sure. Not that those things aren't getting done. They choose one. Some of the people that he knows are capable enough, competent enough, brilliant enough, clever enough, energetic enough to do 2. But he called 3 a circus act, which I find fascinating because when I ask people how many priorities there are, they never have less than 10.
Right, right.
And so I get them to 10. The reason we go from 50, if you will, I'm making that number up, to 10 to 5 is because people will push back at me from going from 50 to 3. I can't get them to do it. They just say it's like you know, I can eat 3 hot dogs for dinner if I'm really hungry, but that doesn't mean I can eat 50 if I really, really had to.
Right, right.
They just
right.
won't do it. In fact, if we spend enough time on it, we whittle them down and we categorize and we recategorize and we shave off some of the loose ones and so on, yeah, we can get down to 3. But I asked to go in 2 steps down to 10 and down to 5 because people won't get to 3. And quite frankly, I think in some cases, some managers don't want to get to 1 because they know what's coming, which is that 1 is not getting done.
Right.
In some fashion. They're nervous about how much time am I spending on number 1. And they say, oh, I'm only spending 8% of my time on number 1. No offense, but if you're spending 8% of your time on number 1 and you don't meet your numbers for number 1, if you work for me, you don't have much defensibility.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. I don't mind if you're spending a lot of time and you're ineffective. But if you're not spending your time on the right stuff, geez, we expect that. That you're a manager, you're an executive, that's a given. You're not doing it, okay? Okay, so no more than 5 key priorities. Now, it's funny. I really do think, I want to go back to the whole 50 down to 10, down to 5, down to 3 thing. I believe part of the reason managers and executives' minds rebel, I could be wrong, Mike, and you may have a different perspective on this, is that there's no overarching priority to their management of their schedule. They're scheduling things, tasks, small items, granules, atoms, if you will, granules of sand. But there's no overarching priority. There's no filtering to say, no, that doesn't fit into one of my priorities, so therefore, because I don't have enough time anyway, I can't put it on there. And they end up becoming, they end up seeing each one of their tasks as a priority. And here's the phrasing that it comes across as. Right now, this thing I'm working on is my priority. Mm. And yeah, you can only do one thing at a time, but that's a red flag for me. When I hear that, I'm like, oh boy, this person's got 50 priorities, 50 tasks they're working on this week, rather than my priorities are this. This task fits into that priority there. I might could demote this task right now and pick on something else, as long as the other task I'm working on still aggregates up to one of my key priorities. But I'm okay with five. Okay, right. I'm okay with five because we're not getting paid an arm and a leg to sit there and work through it with them.
If you get 50, that's a problem.
What percentage of people do you think rebel? I'm going to take 100, right? What percentage of that 100? How many of that 100 came up with a number between 30 and 100 tasks that never got down to three when I was working with them, or that it took extra time and billable hours for me to get down to three?
70% of them.
I was going to say 60. Now, you say that's not priorities. That's what they felt, they were all priorities. I call that spinning plates. That's what I call it. I'm not saying I'm right. It's just
right.
The ones who are good, the executives who are really good that I admire, they got one, maybe two.
Right.
All now, they have people around them they've delegated to, and those people are good. In fact, in some cases, way better than the executive. But the executive has the team that is getting them where they need to go.
Yeah.
So, okay. And that's why that phrase is so often heard. Mike, what is that phrase? When you interview somebody, an executive or a leader, a senior leader or something, says, well, it's not me. I just got a great team of people around me. Well, they know what their strengths and weaknesses are. They're leveraging their strengths on their key priorities, and they're delegating their weaknesses to the people who are better at it than they are.
Yeah.
Simple. Okay, so you're going to come up with a list of five key priorities, and all you got to do is write them down on a clean sheet of paper. After all that analysis, after all that winnowing or aggregating or glomming together, whatever you want to call it, clean sheet of paper, five priorities.
So that was part one of time management. Phew. Reducing all our priorities to just five? That's hard work. And now you've done that, it's time to look at where you've been spending your time. And if you're tempted to skip this because you don't want to know, don't. It's always better to have a diagnosis, because then you can get the medicine.
And then on to step three.
A rough time analysis, and of course 3A is the Drucker time analysis. And this is kind of a fun part. I really like this. Now we're going to look at your calendar. And let's just be clear here. If you don't keep a calendar, if you don't have a schedule, you've got no business listening to the rest of this cast, and I'm sorry you've wasted your time thus far. Not having a reporting / measurement tool, which is what a calendar is, a schedule is, for the most precious resource you have is a gross lack of judgment as a manager. And if you work for me and you thought you'd get away with it, it would affect your bonus at the end of the year. It is unconscionable, in my opinion. It's like a surgeon not tracking her patient's success, right? The longevity of her patients after, you know, whether they die of sepsis or whether they go on to a healthy, happy life. Or literally a company not billing its customers, because sending out bills is a form of measuring one's success, right? If you don't do this, you can't call yourself a professional. And I say that because there are 5% of people that don't have one. Oh, you know, my assistant keeps it, but I don't really know what it is. I just go from thing to thing. And she keeps me on track. Absolutely unacceptable. So, okay, enough. I'm off my soapbox. What I recommend is printing out the last 3 weeks of your calendar in day view, whatever that is, in Outlook or Notes or whatever. Don't print out a month, because that month hopefully won't show everything you're working on in a given day, all the scheduling items. And sometimes even a weekly schedule doesn't do it. So I recommend literally 15 days of each sheet being one day long, so you can see every single thing on your calendar. Okay? Once you have that, do your best to capture the start and stop time of your workday that day. Now we're going to go back to step one. Remember, we were thinking about what we were doing during that day? Just having spent a little bit of time thinking about your time a little bit ago will make it easier to say, okay, 3 weeks ago, about what time did I get into work? Okay. Another neat trick you can use on that is, if you want, you don't have to, look at your email. Okay. Most managers I know violate the fundamental rule of coming into work, and the first thing they do is they sit down and they do email, which is wrong. That's a mistake. The best time that you have of the day is either when nobody's around, first thing in the morning, or between 7 and 10 in the morning, when your brain is freshest. Every psychologist will tell you to make your best decisions before noon and arguably before 10 a.m. So because most managers are violating that rule, a great way to figure it out is to go back through email, sent mail logs. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're not doing early mail early in the morning, the way you used to do at MCI, you look and see what time you sent your first mail and subtract 10 minutes from that. And that's when you got into work.
Yeah.
When I did that to one manager, he says, no, I'm here for hours before. And I said, well, this one was sent at 6 o'clock. Oh, okay. Maybe I wasn't here for hours before that one. So we're using that as sort of a proxy. I'm not suggesting it's right, but it just gives us a start and stop to your day. Okay? By the way, we're not going to talk anymore about email. If I work with an executive, I will say this, though. When they tell me what their schedule was, I go back, and all the meetings that weren't on their calendar that they say they were in, and then I find emails that were sent during that meeting from their PC, I challenge him and I say, you know what? I've got 15 meetings here that you say you were in that weren't on your calendar, that were ad hoc meetings, great. And I've got emails, all of them, during all those meetings that you sent. He says, well, maybe I wasn't in a meeting. Yeah, you weren't. You were sitting at your desk. It's okay, as long as you know that when you analyze.
Right.
Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah, you do an honest assessment. Yeah. This is, you're not going to yell honest with yourself. There's no sense in going through this.
And actually, managers are, I find them to be fundamentally honest and good people, except when it comes to email. Everybody wants to fib. They want to market themselves about how much email they do and how much they have to deal with, but they don't want to admit about how much time it takes them. And it's constant. I mean, every 5 minutes, people are sending an email, which is an enormous waste of time. So anyway, okay. So capture your start and stop time, when you came in and when you left work. And now look, if you want to take that hour that you spent from 9 to 10 o'clock after the kids go to bed, you do email while your spouse is doing her email or his email, fine, no problem. If you want to include that in your day, I'm okay with that. In terms of an analysis, include that in your work time, if you will. And all we're going to do is review each day from coming in to going home in 15-minute increments and write down what you did in those 15 minutes. Now, your calendar will tell you, right, if you're in a meeting or what have you. If you can't remember what you're doing, if you don't have any notes from that from step one analysis that you were in an ad hoc meeting or you were coaching somebody at their desk or you got together for a quick meeting with your general manager about a new structure or something like that, write down nothing. I know you weren't doing nothing, but essentially the purpose of this is to show you that if you have nothing on your calendar and there's no one focusing your time, you can't claim that it was spent on your strategic priorities. I don't see it happening. Right. I mean, 5% of people do. But guess what, folks? Not all of you are in the 5%, right? Most of you are in the 95%. And I'm guilty of this as well. Don't get me wrong. I have the same challenge I do when I have unscheduled time. I find myself much lazier. You know, this cast is an example of trying to crunch things into a specific time period as we get better and better and better at putting casts together. For non-scheduled time, unless you'll swear that what you were doing was, unless you'll swear to what you were doing, and again, be careful about your memory from 3 weeks ago, write down nothing. Now, hopefully you can see where we're going with this. What we're trying to do is find out what you actually did over the past 3 weeks and see how it relates to that one page of no more than 5 key priorities. And what we want you to do when you're done is aggregate them under those 5 key priorities. And if it doesn't fit under one of the 5 keys, and don't twist it too hard to fit.
Right.
Put it over there in another category. If you've got more than 5, if you've got a secondary list, I'm not suggesting you break it out into those 5 at all. Don't worry about that, because we already said 3 is a circus act. So 5, is more than you need. So 10 is just a waste. Don't break them down into the 10. Quite frankly, there probably won't be that many of them, and you'll have one or two things under each of the 10. Okay? Make some columns in terms of the 5. Add it all up. Put some percentages next to them, and there you have it. That's kind of how you spend your time. Is it ideal? Is it exact? No. If you want an exact one, do this analysis in 3-week increments for the next 6 months. You cannot get any more accurate about past time than roughly this 15-minute increment thing, unless you start managing your schedule in advance and breaking your time down. Okay?
Okay.
Or you can do step 3A, which is a Drucker time analysis. Okay, and this is simply using an assistant, which for many managers is not possible, and that's fine, to capture everything you do in 10-minute increments. Your assistant, he or she, follows you around, and every 10 minutes writes down what it is you're doing. And if you're an executive, that's a dang good way to use your assistant. There is nothing shameful about doing this. Hmm. If you can figure out a way to be 5% more efficient with money that the company spends $250,000 of you in salary plus another $100,000 in bonus, that is very, very powerful use of money and time. Now, you can also do it yourself. One of the things I did once was, it sounds really corny, but every 10 minutes, I put an alarm on my PDA.
Hmm.
And it irritated me for the first 6 hours, and then I got used to it. And every 10 minutes, I had a little buzz alarm, and I wrote on a sheet of paper
what
I was doing. Yeah, it's like a metronome thing. It's a random, actually, the original time studies, they use random samples, and you'd carry around a random number generator, and it would beep when it came to a certain number, and you'd write down what you were doing. And you could tolerate that for a period of time. Sometimes it was 6 minutes, sometimes it was 81 minutes. It didn't matter. The randomness as such gave it a good sample. But if you do it every 10 minutes, you're going to get a good sense. Some people say, Mark, I can't do the 10 minutes. I want to do 20 minutes. Fine. 20 minutes is fine, too. Don't do half an hour. Don't do 45 minutes. You start losing some of the details. You can use your PDA, like I did with my Trio, or you can use a stopwatch if you want, and every 10 minutes have it, you know, stop, and then you go, oh, I've got it, you know, and one of those digital stopwatches, it can make a noise, it'll beep for you. It'll irritate you a little bit to do it, but it'll be very, very powerful. So the Drucker time analysis is not looking at your schedule, it's actually doing it going forward for 3 weeks.
Hmm.
Very powerful.
Oh, I bet.
Lots of data. A little bit irritating. You'll never forget it as long as you do. 20 years from now, I've had executives say, I did this 20 years ago when I was a junior executive. I went to a bank and we had a big productivity initiative because costs were being cut and so on. And everybody was stunned by what they discovered. And they actually had time management experts in there, productivity experts in there, workflow experts in there, just actually telling them the raw data, which was, yeah, you say you're doing X, but you're really not. I actually had a unit in the Army that I was running that got surveyed by the Army for how productive we were. And we were the most productive unit in the Army that year, and we had 66% productivity.
Hmm.
Which I was afraid I was going to get fired for. They said, no, this is great. It's the most productive I've been to. We found out later it was the most productive in the Army. 66%. So you got dead time, folks.
Yeah.
Just get used to it. Okay. So that's a more involved, and it's real time rather than analysis of past. Either one of them works. I don't think you need to do both by any stretch of the imagination, because we want results. We want action. This is all analysis. You know, you're not getting paid for analysis. You get paid for decisions and results. So what's the results? And the results come in step four. And there's more to talk about with time analysis, Mike. There's more analysis, and there's more change to be done. But step four, as simple as it is the most important thing you can do when it comes to managing your time, or let's be more clear, managing your priorities or managing your schedule management. And that is, again, this is the prescriptive step. And that is very, very simple. Now you know what you've been doing and how off or on it is with all your priorities. We recommend that you do nothing more than schedule your primary responsibility. That's it. Some people have heard of this big rocks example that people use, where they fill up a jar with sand and small rocks and so on, and then you can't fit the big rocks in there, and they pour it all out and they put the big rocks in first, and then you can put smaller rocks in and so on. That's essentially what we're getting at here. But I'm not suggesting you pick all five. All I want you to do is one, because if you pick all five and you try to schedule it and you do what I'm suggesting next, you're going to fill up and you're going to hate it. And you're gonna go back to the way you did before. I'm suggesting take this thing in small bites. So pick your first priority and put it on your calendar. It's not critical that you know what you're going to do in each of the blocks that you're going to schedule, okay? And I don't know whether I should tell you to put it for 5 hours a day or 2 hours a day or no more than 90 minutes a day or maybe 90 minutes every 3 or 4 days, depending upon what your schedule is. But what I will say is this. In the first week, at least 2 90-minute blocks for your primary responsibility. You don't need to know what you're doing in those primary blocks, in that 90-minute block, because the first one, all you need to do is start spending time saying, okay, in this responsibility, what are the things I should be doing? And you use that 90 minutes to start planning your time around the next 90-minute block.
But the key is, though, those 2 90-minute blocks,
nothing
you're
touches
focusing
them.
on your number one priority.
And if you're really smart, you're doing it between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m. Okay. And I actually recommend that we don't do one-on-ones in that first time in the morning, because the value of my mentality is not going to be gained in the one-on-one. It's important for relationships, but it's the creativity, it's the analysis, it's the decision-making skills that I want to leverage. And that's why I tend to schedule that time in the morning. And also, it's a reminder, if you think of it in the morning rather than at the end of the day, you have a much more likely opportunity to get a couple of tasks done in your primary responsibility later in the day because you were thinking about it first thing in the morning. If you think about it at the end of the day, when you're sloppy, when you're lazy, no offense, folks, but it's true for me too. If you're not as crisp and you say, okay, tomorrow I'll get to that, then tomorrow comes in and you do that email and somebody else's priority comes up to the top of your mind and you don't get to it. You do it in the morning, that 90 minutes, inviolable time, then later in the afternoon you might have targets of opportunity come up where you can push the peanut forward, so to speak, on your primary responsibility. And by the way, don't schedule more than 90 minutes at a time for two reasons. One, you won't be effective much working on one thing past 90 minutes. That's what the human brain can take, I'm told. And the second thing is people will start wondering how it is you're scheduling two-hour blocks of time, and they'll start nibbling away at it. Mm. 90 minutes, they'll leave you alone on. More than that, I find, organizationally speaking, in the behavior, in the organizational behavior I'm observing, people will start asking for that time. What are you doing then? Like, you know, can I have half of that? Can you separate it into two-hour blocks?
Right.
90 minutes, they won't mess with you.
Hmm.
It seems simple, but just that, knowing what your primary responsibility is and having on your calendar at least twice every week will make you noticeably more effective. And that's based on the analysis that you're going to do. And can we make this kind of a contest? Can we?
Sure.
So let's do this. We offer to the first person who takes the time, and we don't want it done in 5 minutes. We don't want it cobbled together. We'll offer a book of your choice to the Manager Tools member who takes the time, goes through the steps, uses step 3 or 3A, whichever one. I'd recommend step 3, obviously, because you're probably going to get beat to the punch by somebody else. And be prepared to show us your work, and then be prepared to either post about it or talk about it with us in terms of your revelations regarding schedule management and your priorities and how you use your time.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I'm looking
forward to that.
Yeah, really, that'd be neat.
So it's interesting. I wonder, and maybe we'll get some feedback on this, from how many people were disappointed, because I suspect that many people came to this podcast wanting to know how to get more tasks done in a given amount of time. And what we're saying, the Manager Tools, number one principle around time management, forget it. It's not about getting more things done in a period of time. It's about getting the most important things
exactly.
done.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know what? And that relates to my point about when people ask me about, you know, how do I balance work family? You don't balance it. You go home. It's not about more for work. There is no more time. It's about choosing more effectively. You don't get paid the money you're paid as a manager to try to get more. You get paid to get better, which is more efficient around the time that you have. And that's saying no to things. It's strategy and time management are similar in the way that it's about saying yes to one thing and therefore, by definition, saying no to others. And managers sometimes have to say no. No, I know that's important to you, but that doesn't fit into my wheelhouse and I'm not going to do it. A little bit of pain, a little bit of pinch, long run, you end up worrying about your primary responsibility. Nothing shameful about that.
Cool.
Okay.
I look forward to more of these.
Great. Thanks.
All right, my friend. See ya. So there you go. Our thoughts on time management. Let us know what you think on the discussion forums at www.manager-tools.com/forums or send us a note at show@manager-tools.com. Until next week, have a great one and so long.